Topics. Anger. Is it a character trait or is it a behavior?
Behavior.
What do you think?
I think everybody gets angry. Do you know anybody who never gets angry?
But there are those who get angry more often.
But there are people who are angry.
There are people who have that trait.
Angry,
right.
Dominating.
But more often it's
behavior.
Okay.
There are just a few weird people out there who are just mad at the world.
It's a habit, too, maybe a bad habit.
Maybe.
Could be, yeah, I like that.
Okay, so everyone. Right, so it's something everybody has, right? So some of them we see, not everybody has, like gluttony. There are people you could say legitimately aren't gluttonous people, right? And have never displayed gluttony, and there's some who it's a part of almost the definition of who they are. But anger, right, so anger is something that everybody has, and we'll see that when we look through the Torah, even some of our greatest leaders, some of our shining lights, have displayed anger.
Moshe
displays anger, right, when he smashes the tablets.
That's anger.
Right, and we'll see times when the Torah explicitly says, this person got angry, right? And uses a very strong language of angry. And it's something that we see happens with the most righteous of people in the Torah and the most wicked of people in Torah. Okay? And we'll get to that a little bit. We'll contrast the same language that's used for two very different people. And we'll see that a few different sources that seem to say that anger is terrible, but also that anger has a good side. Okay? That anger has a good side. That there is a time to be angry. Right? There's a time to be angry. That anger, that never being angry, also may not be the best thing. Right? Or at the very least, an inability to show emotion, to show that one is angry, is the problem as well. I mean, to be too flatline, right? And then the example I was told once is, it's great for a person to be calm and to be collected, but if there's a fire in the apartment building and someone's sauntering through the hallways, then something's wrong with that person too, right? So there's a balance, right? And we don't want to be, like we've been saying, quoting the Rambam's concept of the golden mean, that we don't want to be too extreme in either direction. Sometimes we want to be in the middle, sometimes we want to be leaning in one side, but still there's a balance. So when it comes to anger, we'll see there is a balance, but we're definitely leaning in one direction. So let's show first the clip of the classic view of anger. Think of an angry person in the movie. This is what I think of. Someone turn the lights off. Okay. I hope there's not a lot of cursing in the scene. I didn't watch it first. So.
Okay,
so what so the scene play out was that everyone remembers the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the scene is that they can't prove that Jack Nicholson was involved in the Code Red, right? And he's been playing dumb and I know what was going on, and if it happened it doesn't do with me. And he was right. So their only strategy was to get him worked up to the point where he admitted that he ordered the Code Red, which is a risky move because, you know, it required him to willingly admit to it. So what was the strategy? What was Tom Cruise's strategy?
Get him angry, then he doesn't think straight.
Okay, so get him angry, get him defensive, and then he doesn't... Well, is it that he doesn't think straight? That's...
He loses control.
His emotions.
Yeah, once you get angry, you sort of lose control. You do things that you wouldn't normally do if you were thinking calmly.
So what does he want him to do when he gets angry?
He wants him to admit whatever... He wants him to say something that he wouldn't ordinarily say.
Okay.
That he ordered the Code Red.
He wants him to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh.
He wants him to admit something, whether it's the truth or not, I'm not sure.
Well, he's not going to admit to if it's not true. I mean, that's not his strategy. His strategy is not to make up a lie that's going to...
...movie avoiding answering that question.
Right.
And so now, at this point, why would he admit it now, unless he's lost control?
Right. So what does losing control have to do with answering the question? That's the question.
Made him very, very angry.
So what does being angry have to do with answering the question?
Because you don't think realistically.
What?
You don't think. And you blow
your artifice sort of, falls away.
And you're sort of tapping into the truth or who you are.
Okay, so he's tapping into a raw nerve, right? He's tapping into, ultimately, an authenticity, an honesty that wasn't there before, right? So this goes back to the same Gemara that we read last week, which applies here also, number 4, right? As Rabbi Eli phrased it, you can recognize a person's real character by his wine cup, his koso, his purse, his kiso, and his anger, his kaso, right? If you want to know what a person's really about, what they're truly about, see what they do when they're drunk, see what they do with their money, and see what they do when they're angry.
It's their vulnerability.
Yeah, I mean, right, you're removing their inhibitions, the barriers, for example, like children. Children get so much angrier more often than adults do, right? Children spend a lot of time being angry, right? I mean, they're angry much more often than adults ever are. So what is the reason for that? Is it that children just get angry more than adults do? Or is it that adults have built up enough barriers that they know not to act on their anger? What is it? What do you think it is?
I think it's more they don't have the mental and social equipment yet to not get angry. They don't have any other means of expressing what they feel.
Okay.
Or anger.
What?
They cannot hold back the anger.
Okay, so is it that adults are angry less than children, or that adults have learned how to
control it
more? Okay, or not show it as much.
Or they've been desensitized over time.
Or desensitized?
Yes, they built a tolerance up.
Yeah. Well, also,
frustration. Adults have more ways of expressing their feelings. Children don't have as many, so a lot of things get filtered towards anger, even if they're not initially angry.
Okay, so the anger is the... So for children, what is the anger? How would you describe what is the anger?
It's really about it's mine, or I want it.
Control.
Frustration.
Right, but it's the raw emotion at its right in its unadulterated form, right? It's honest, right? The anger is always honest. It's never from a place of, you know, trying to fool somebody or trying to fool themselves. It's extremely honest. The truth is, when kids get angry, you know what they really think. Just like when adults get angry, you find out what they really think, right? But like we said, adults have more ways of communicating, also more ways of showing anger, right? We can be more passive-aggressive, we can be more manipulative, we can be more calculating, we could avoid people, right? Adults have, within the world of showing anger, have more tools at their disposal.
Self-interest demands that we put a sock in it.
Okay, right.
You have something to lose by being
right. Yes, we have other people depending on you.
That's why people in their car get so angry, because they just drink and drive away from the person. Exactly. They never would act that way on the sidewalk. Right. But in their car, they scream and yell. And
right. Or people on the internet.
Right.
People on the internet are much angrier and use much different... Right, okay, for sure. Your reputation, your self-interest, your... Right. So some people are better at controlling the anger, or even someone's removing the anger, but the raw emotion of anger is still present, right? Very often, let's get to the sources. I don't want to give everything away before we get to the sources. Okay, number one, who wants resource number one?
Anger is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better.
Okay, this is an interesting line from Kohelet, from Ecclesiastes, written by King Solomon, that anger is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. So, there's a few different interpretations. What do you think this means?
It's better to get it off your chest.
Okay.
It's almost like by experiencing this discomfort, you become a better person. Or, I don't know, it's something good. I don't know, the heart is made better.
Okay.
Or you maybe become more compassionate. Is that what it means by the heart is made better?
Okay.
You have a more compassionate heart.
Where does what does the sadness mean? Where does how does sadness get in there?
I was wondering the same thing.
Okay, let's see. Let me get the Hebrew. You want to pass, pass a Tanakh?
Guilt?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Thanks, Miriam. This is a very difficult line to translate. There's a lot of different ways it's translated, just the nuance of it. Okay, so the Hebrew is... Tov kaas mischok, ki baro panim yitav lev. Is face. Countenance, yeah. No, it's a pretty accurate translation. Now, some translate kaas here as grief instead of anger. That's not a very literal translation, but sometimes people do that. But I think literally, it's kaas, it's anger. So, often the way this verse is understood is as if to say that, let's say you are angry at someone, okay? So there are people who take that emotion and then use it to improve that relationship, or to speak to the person, or to bring it to its head and then discuss it. There are those, though, instead, who laugh it off. Right? And who, right, it's like Dr. Hibbert in The Simpsons, right, like, laughs at inappropriate times, right, or laughs sometimes it doesn't make sense to laugh, because that's the only way they know how to handle the awkwardness of certain situations, right? So, if you can take the emotion, which is a valid emotion for that time, and then use it productively, then your heart will be made better, right? The sadness of the countenance, meaning by, you are upset. You're not happy about it. So let's deal with it. Let's figure it out. Instead of just laughing it off and minimizing it, because if you minimize everything, then nothing gets better. Right? Nothing gets better because we're just avoiding it, we're avoiding it, we're avoiding it, we're avoiding it, we're avoiding it, and it never gets better. So this is a positive sense of anger. That anger comes from a real place. Now, maybe you shouldn't be angry. Maybe you're angry because you're insecure. Or maybe you're angry because you're misjudging somebody. Or maybe you're angry because you're frustrated about a million other things and now it's coming against this person. Right? It might not be even... the anger might not even be fair. Right? But if you don't deal with the anger on some level, or at least try to understand where it's coming from and then get it out, then you're going to end up much worse off. Okay? So... to deny that you're angry is not helpful. I mean, that's the point of this verse in Kohelet. To deny it, that doesn't mean you scream at the person. It doesn't mean you just let the raw anger come out as is. But you have to admit that you are angry. And once you admit that you are angry, now you can do something about that. Well, why am I angry? Why am I angry here? And then you can at least contemplate it. But the raw emotion is telling you something. Right? If we look at emotions... not as determining who we are as people, but as telltale signs as to what's really going on inside of our heads, then emotions are tips. They're tipping us off as to what's really going on inside of us. Because we're often not too honest with ourselves. And either we don't want to admit that we're feeling something, or we don't want to have to deal with it right now, or it's coming from a place that we don't want to get into. And we just much rather push it and push it and push it and push it and push it further and further away. But as we know, if you keep pushing things further and further away, eventually they come back in droves, right? So you can repress something so much, but then that just builds up animosity and then usually blows out in an uncontrolled way that has no purpose and becomes much harder then to make purposeful. So if you look at the anger... and recognize it and say, you know what, I am angry here, let's deal with this. then it can improve. But so I think that's number one. So looking at anger is something everyone has, but it's a tip, right? It's not defining who you are, but it's a tip as to what's going on inside your head. What's going on inside your head that you have to deal with, because obviously it's not sitting right with you. So deal with it. But when you don't deal with it, if you laugh at it, then your heart won't be made better. Your heart will feel better if you take the anger and you deal with it. If you don't deal with it, then your heart won't be made better. Hear what it's saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the good side of anger. And number two as well, in Kohelet. I'll read in Hebrew also, just so we get the Hebrew. This is chapter 1, verse 18. In Hebrew it is, Ki berov chachma rav kas, v'yosif dad yosif machov. For in much wisdom there is much anger, and he that increases knowledge increases sorrow. What does this mean?
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right. That the less you know about the world, the easier it is. Right.
But here are two passages in which anger and sadness are intermingled, and that's interesting. It says, "There's much wisdom. Where there's wisdom, there's anger. He that increases knowledge increases sorrow." So are you angry because it's depressing what you're finding out about the world?
No, I think they're interrelated. You know, like, I'm thinking of, you know, hearing about, like, something very sad, like hearing about someone passing away before their time, you know, and you're very sad, and then as you sit by yourself and you kind of think about it and reflect it, if it's someone that was close to you, you get angry at the unfairness, you know, or if you hear about, you know, someone getting killed for some dumb reason, at first it's very sad for the victim, but then you get angry for the injustice of whatever may have happened. So I think they're interrelated.
I think the verse is true as well. You start with sadness and went to anger. Then you can go to anger and go to sadness as well. Right? You're angry at someone and you have it out with them, and what happens next is there's usually crying involved, right? That sadness is the result of the anger coming to its head and kind of now dealing with this new reality and dealing with these changes that are happening.
There's a reflection that's going on. There's a deep reflection.
Right.
So that greets the sadness.
Right, right, right. And so it...
A regret,
maybe. Right, regret, or showing an emptiness, or showing a failing, or showing... Right, so there's all sorts of things that can be coming at you. So anger is usually can be the initial emotion, and then sadness is like the resulting emotion.
I'm thinking like... probably how Maria Shriver is when she heard.
Right, right. Initially, she's angry.
But I'm sure right now she's very sad.
Right, but you don't stay angry for long. The anger is the short term, right? Then after the anger, it's like, now what does all this mean? Oh my God, this is terrible.
It's a burst of energy.
Yeah, exactly. The anger is the burst of energy, but it's really a burst of sadness that's coming, but it's like so concentrated that it's not, it's coming with anger. Right, exactly. Right, it's not that the emotion changes; it's that the anger is the raw emotion, you know, the distilled emotion. So yeah, that's a good point. That they're interwoven. But the more you know and the more you see, you know, you become jaded, you become depressed, and that becomes a challenge for anyone in public office, for anyone in leadership positions, when you begin to see the inner workings of something, right? The inner workings of an organization, the inner workings of a country, the inner workings of anything, there is a sadness that comes with it, right? Because it's not exactly the way you thought it was going to be. And it's not as pure as you would hoped it would be. And you had just kind of hoped it would be this, you know, everyone would be well-meaning, and everyone would be easy to work with, and everything would be smooth, and right? And that's, you know, kind of, you know, when you're young, that's kind of how you plan your life. I'll do this, and I'll do this, and I'll do this, and it'll be perfect, right? And that's kind of the way we think about it. And that's how we think of relationships, and that's how, you know, yeah, no one wants to hear, you know, that's why all fairy tales end at happily ever after, right? They don't want to get into, you know, the first fight, right? Fairy tales don't want to get into that, right? Because, you know, that's kind of the way we want it to be, right? we celebrate the royal wedding, not the royal fallout. Right? So that's right, because we want it to be, you know, when we go into something, that's what we want it to be. And then the more we see and the more we learn about the world and about people, we realize that that's not the case. Right? It's never the case. And, you know, go back to any figure in Jewish history, and, you know, I mean, Jacob is the best example. He started off as the most innocent of any of them. Right? He's even called Ish Tamim. He was the innocent one. He was called the innocent one. And what he saw in his life, his brother wants to kill him, he has to trick his parents, his father-in-law tricks him, his sons sell his, you know. So how did he maintain any sense of hope? How did he maintain any sense of goodness in this world? When literally anyone close to him, and we'll see another example of that, it seems that everyone close to him either betrayed him or he had to betray them. I mean, it was murky and it was messy the entire time. But that's the point. The point is that that's the way the world is. That the challenge in this world is to keep seeing the goodness even when not everything and everyone is going to be good around you. Right? And that's the challenge. Right?
Big challenge.
What?
Big.
It's a big challenge. No, because the easy thing to do is once that's becoming perfect is to give up hope. Right? You could be angry and you can be in full of sorrow. And you're right. If you just avoid it and stay out of it and don't learn anything and just kind of stay away from the world altogether, you can be ignorance is bliss. It's so much easier, you know? It's so much easier that way. Right? You could follow football and not get into the mess of the lockout right now and the money and everyone's fighting over billions of dollars and, you know, it's so much easier just to ignore it. But, you know, the more you delve into something, the messier it gets. And everything, you know, there's very few things in this world, in the physical world, that are not like that. So, and that's the challenge. That's the challenge is of maintaining one's goodness. Okay. Number three. Who wants to read number three?
There are three people the Holy One loves. One who does not get angry, one who does not get drunk, and one who does not stand on ceremony.
What stand on ceremonies means they're not overly concerned with their own honor.
They're modest.
Well, not just that they're modest, but
not haughty.
They can take a punch, not literally, but figuratively, yeah. Right? Meaning, if they're not insulted by everything, mm-hmm. Right? There's some people who the slightest thing is offensive and they're insulted, and okay. You know, and
sense of humor.
What
they have a sense of humor.
They have a sense of humor. They don't take themselves too seriously. They're able to mm-hmm. slough things off and not. You know, hold grudges, right? So these three people, the people that Hashem loves, these three people allow the world to function. If somebody gets angry all the time, then it's very hard for things to be productive, right? It's very hard because the anger always gets in the way. And, you know, you can't have a rational conversation. One is always getting drunk as well. They're not really dealing with the problems at hand. They're trying to avoid them. And since someone's easily insulted also, it just makes it impossible because there's just there's too much going on. There's too much going on. And we could all, I'm sure everyone now in our think about people in our lives that we know that are like that. And that becomes one of the most difficult things to deal with is because if someone is, you know, always angry, and really one in three are usually very intertwined. Someone's offended by everything and gets angry very easily, typically.
Yeah.
You know. Sorry?
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah. So, everything's a big deal. Everything's a big deal. And sometimes they invent reasons to be insulted. To the point you just start avoiding them, right? Because who wants to deal with it? Right? At a certain point, who wants to deal with it anymore? So, that's where anger is bad. But it's not the emotion that's bad. Again, it's the action that's bad, right? Like we said, the anger, the emotion of anger is teaching you something. Just like fear is teaching you something. If you're afraid of something, well, why are you afraid? You know, what's going on there that you should know about? So anger too. But to act angry, that is the problem. Because we are not limited, we are not beholden to our emotions. Our emotions are there, but we have the ability to If you go to source number 10 from Proverbs, I'm skipping around a bit, but in Proverbs, also by King Solomon, it says, "It is the discretion of a man to be slow to anger. It is in his glory to pass over transgression." We have free will. We have choice. And maybe there are people who their emotion of anger is stronger, be it because of personality, be it because of upbringing, because of role models they had. But still, it is discretion of a man to be slow to anger. That is still your choice. So, just because you're angry does not mean that you have to show anger. Right? You have the ability to hold back.
But some people are like we were saying in the beginning, are angry all the time, and they're just, their demeanor is anger, you know? Everything about them is anger.
Right.
So how do they... It's almost their personality at that point.
They have a lot more work to do. Seriously, they have a lot more work to do. It doesn't have to be. I mean, the point is, it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. You're right, it gets harder. Like any character trait or any behavior, the more entrenched it is in who you are, the harder it gets to change it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. It means it's a longer process. Mm-hmm. But, you know, pick your poison here. Pick your deadly sin, and it's going to be true for pretty much anyone. And so it might take years. It might take years and years and years. It takes lots of therapy, but the first point is just the recognition that you have the ability to control that. You have that ability. We all have that ability, because if you see someone who is calm and cool and collected, right, to look at them and say, "Oh, they're so lucky that they never get angry," that's absurd, right? They're not lucky. Look how impressive it is that they're able to control themselves. They're just as angry as anybody else. Right, they have the same emotions hitting them. They have the same yetzahara, the same inclinations that are hitting them from all sides. They just have developed tools in their life to not react right away. Right? Very often what happens is if you're able to counter emotion with intellect, then you're able to diffuse the situation very quickly. Because the emotion doesn't want intellect in play. So once you even ask yourself, "Why am I angry right now?" you've already diffused the anger, right? Because now the emotion has to explain itself. An emotion doesn't want to have to ever explain itself in any rational way. So even that process, and that's a process that you have control over, right? And that's a tool you can use, right? Just ask yourself that question. You've already diffused the situation immensely. So it's a discretion. It is a discretion of man to be slow to anger. That's a choice that you have. So the emotion is always there, but how you show it, that's it. So we've seen in the first two sources that the emotion of anger is a very healthy emotion, and in some ways a very helpful emotion. At the same time, it's the emotion that more than any other emotion, we are asked to curtail really, you know, and any meaningful sign of it. Let's go to source number 6. This is from Maimonides. Can I read number 6? It's kind of a longer one.
"So too with anger, which is an extremely destructive trait, and it is fitting that one should distance oneself from it to the most extreme and train himself not to get angry, even at something which it is appropriate to be angry. If he wishes to make a point with his family or his community, if he was a trustee and he wishes to improve their ways, he should feign anger in front of them in order to impress them, but he should be in control of himself when he is feigning anger. For he should not truly be angry."
So let's just discuss this. So the Maimonides' approach is: take the anger, deal with it, make it subside. Never react angry when you are angry. There are times you have to seem angry, but you should never actually be angry when you do that. Right? So if you want to make a point to your children.
Oh.
So first make sure you're no longer angry, and then act angry. Right? That's his point. Right? Because when you're acting angry because you're angry, so then you've lost control of how you're going to do this, how this is going to go. So, right? So deal with the anger first. Now, so this point is number one, there are times that you have to do. Now, the context here is there's one other trait that he says you should never have anything to do with whatsoever, and that was the first one we talked about, haughtiness. Right? So haughtiness is something that there's no place for whatsoever. Right? Now, haughtiness, that you can still have self-confidence and not be haughty, but haughtiness itself, that's the one thing he says you should have nothing to do with. Said number two on that list is anger. Anger is something which you should have somewhat of a part of in how you behave. And that's because there are times that you have to look angry. You never have to look haughty. That you never have to do. But there are times when you have to look angry. Because if you want to make a point, or you want people to see you're serious, so sometimes that's what you have to do. Right? You have to be a good actor. That's what he's saying. You have to be a good actor. Good actors can act angry. Right? So you have to know when to do that, how to do that. But you should never actually be angry. That's his point.
Or you should never act out your anger.
Right, you're right. You are angry, so then you deal with the emotion, and you understand it, and you learn from it. Why am I angry? I'm angry because this is happening, and I think it's wrong. You're right, we should do something here. Let's do it. Let's act angry now. Right? I mean, that's the mental conversation he's talking about. Instead of just acting out, because then there's no... Because then you're not calculating how you're going to handle it, how you're going to say it. Then it's just going to come out. So let it seem very angry, but also let it come from a place of thought as well. So you're combining the two. But the pure emotion of anger is just a dangerous game to play. Okay, want to finish the next paragraph?
The sage has stated, anyone who becomes angry is like one who practices idolatry. And they stated, anyone who is angry, if he is wise, his wisdom flees from him. If he is a prophet, his prophecy flees from him. Those who live with rage, their lives aren't worth living. Therefore, they commanded us to distance ourselves from anger to the point where we will not be sensitive to that which is worth being angry about. This is the best way and the way of the righteous. They will take insults, but they will not insult others. They will heed their shame, and they will not respond. They only act out of love, and they are happy even in their affliction. It is written of them, and those who love him are like the sun that comes out when it is most mighty.
Okay.
That's like a good person.
That's it, right. That's the really, really good person. But his point, you know, I think this is interesting, is that someone who is angry, so why is it that someone who is angry, if he is wise, his wisdom flees from him? If he's a prophet, his prophecy flees from him. Why is that true?
Because he loses control.
Okay.
Loses focus.
But the point is that when you are angry, your wisdom is irrelevant. Doesn't matter how much you know. It doesn't matter how much you've attained. Doesn't matter how wise you are. Because in the moment you are angry, you have none of those things at your disposal. Right? It's as if they've been all blocked out. They're not there anymore. You're acting on pure emotion. And pure emotion, like I said, does not want intellect to be part of the conversation. So, you have just taken all the wisdom you've attained and made it worthless, meaningless. How could that be good? How could that be the proper way to respond to anything? Right? If you spent your lifetime learning from life and learning from sages and learning from the Torah, and you've got all this at your disposal, then why would you just forsake it? How could it ever make sense to respond in a way that you don't use any of those tools? So that's what it's saying, is that the moment when you are angry, you no longer have any of those tools. And even prophecy. If a prophet was angry, they could not talk to God. Because they're not open to it. There wouldn't be. There's no room. You know, that's why it says in Pirkei Avot, right? In sages, it says, do not try to appease an angry person when they are angry. It's useless. To try to talk to someone when they're angry is useless. Right? There's nothing to talk about. When they calm down, you can then you can talk. Because when someone's angry, first of all, it's a very selfish emotion. right? There's no room for anybody else in the conversation with an angry person. There's no room. And there's no room for even their own brains to be there. So it's just them emoting. So go ahead, emote all you want. Eventually, you know, it'll stop. It can't do it forever. So, and at those times, they're basically, their wisdom, their intelligence is all out the window, and you can't communicate with them. So that's why it's so destructive, because this person's basically taken all that they are and turned themselves into a small child, acting purely on the emotion of the moment. And at that moment, they're not really who they are. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Question. So, when Hashem is angry,
yeah,
I mean, how does that translate?
Well, it makes sense to apply it the same way, that God acts angry. So we understand what's going on. It doesn't make sense for God to be angry in the literal sense.
So he just acts, okay. He's trying to make a point.
Right. A point in a way that we can understand it. So when the Torah says, in God's wrath, right, or God became angry, so it doesn't mean literally God was angry, because that's an emotion. First, God doesn't have emotions. Emotions are a uniquely human trait. I guess animals have emotions on some level as well. They have anger, but more frustration. It doesn't make sense that God is angry. God is vengeful. God is... No, those things make sense. Those are tools that we can relate to what's going on. Right? So it makes sense to us. Because, you know, God calculated that if the people are going to repent in the situation, then God would have to do X, Y, and Z, and they're not going to like it. So it doesn't say that. It says God was angry, because that's what we can relate to, because we can picture our parents being angry. You know, so we can relate to. Okay. So I brought in 7 and 8 as the, kind of this contrast I was talking about earlier. So number 7, when Haman himself saw that Mordechai did not bow down and prostrate himself before him, Haman was filled with wrath, with anger. And the word there is chama. Okay? So the Hebrew word chama.
Wrath.
Well, let's look at the root here. It's interesting.
And what was the word used for anger in the first one?
Kas. Okay. So kas is a typical word for anger. Okay? Well, that's...
Or grief.
Sorry. That was written poorly. Okay, so here the Hebrew word is chama. Now, chama can mean something else in Hebrew. What else can it mean?
Sun.
A sun, right.
A sun.
S-U-N.
S-U-N, the sun, right? Oh. And what does cham mean?
Hot.
Hot, right? So cham is hot.
Where do you find chama as sun? Is that a biblical word for sun?
Or Aramaic?
It's. I think it's used... I would have to look it up if it's used biblically.
I think it's more Aramaic.
It's definitely used in the Aramaic. It's definitely used in the Mishnah.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's Aramaic or just I think it's a
Shemesh
Hebrew form.
Hebrew.
Yeah,
for sure Shemesh is, but Chama is also used. I'm not so sure what the earliest usage is.
And it's not used in speaking Hebrew.
Today? I think it is today. Yeah. Do you want to look in the Jasher maybe and see how far back it goes? You can see what the root is there. You see it?
It makes sense that hot and wrath are sort of similar.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look up Chama, and I'll tell you the earliest. We'll see if it's biblical or only Mishnah. But definitely the Mishnah uses Chama for sun. Yeah. But I think it makes sense, because Cham is hot, Chama is sun. But then it becomes like wrath. So when Chama is used, that's... it's not just anger, it's... anger, right? It's wrath. So, right, so it's... a person's heating up, right? They're getting red in the face. They're heating up. They're getting hot. So that's the term used here. So when Haman realizes that Mordechai is not bowing down to him, the term used is chama. He is angry, right? And what happens to Haman? Right? What happens with his anger?
It's the end of him,
yeah. Right? Haman's anger, I think the ultimate character who shows anger in Tanakh, I think, is Haman. His anger completely it becomes obsessive. Mordechai is now the only thing he cares about. Here you have a person, the second most powerful person in the entire world, literally. And now, this Jew doesn't bow down to him, and all he can see is this one person is not bowing down to him. He can't see everything else. And the rest of his life is obsessed with killing Mordechai, and then killing his people. Even though that should be the last thing on his plate. It doesn't make any sense that this is his focus. This is your focus, the Jewish people. They're causing you no problems whatsoever. And that ends up being his undoing. So his anger, which comes from a place of, you know, insecurity and all these other things, and haughtiness and all these other places, but it comes down to the anger. That anger, that chama, that never ceases. You got something, Neil?
It doesn't say much. There's no verses, but maybe Sun starting on his new cycle.
You want to pass it over? Yeah. I've got experience in how to use that.
What's the meaning of the word coma?
Wall.
I thought so.
Yeah.
No. Is that with a hey or a he?
I think it's a hey also, yeah.
On the end?
No. At the beginning is it? So it's the same root. Wall and sun.
Yeah. That's, yeah. All right, I don't know, I'm not...
All right.
Oh, here it is, okay. It seems like it's mostly in the Mishnah and the Talmud. I don't see any sources in Tanakh. Chema is anger. Yeah, so that we see in Tanakh. We see the anger as Chememhe. Okay. The same term is used in source number 8. This is after Leah's already had 4 children, and Rachel is childless, and she's frustrated. So Rachel saw that she had not borne children to Jacob, so Rachel became envious of her sister. She said to Jacob, "Give me children, otherwise I am dead." Jacob's anger flared up at Rachel, and he said, "Am I instead of God who has withheld from you fruit of the womb?" So here, in the same term used, he is not just angry, he is... Right, he is he's wrathful. So here's Jacob, he gets angry at Rachel, right? Rachel says, "Pray for me," right? And Jacob's response is, "Am I instead of God who's withheld from you the fruit?" Like, why are you coming to me with this? Interesting response. Not the most helpful response, it would seem, right? Not the most sensitive response. So what is his response?
Middle East.
Middle Eastern. So what's his response? Why is he responding to her this way?
He has children.
Okay, so first he has children, so he keeps saying, "It's not me, it's you." Right? But again, how helpful is that? Maybe it is helpful.
He's angry because of the lack of belief in Hashem, maybe, or something? Is that what he's angry about?
That's what I think he's angry about.
Well, he can't give anything. He can't give her children.
Right, it's up to Hashem. And she's blaming him instead of talking to Hashem.
Right. So it could be that the anger, the point of the anger is to say, obviously, you know, obviously the patriarchs and matriarchs worked on a different level. And withholding children from them was a way that God communicated with them or got them to repent. It happened with Abraham and Sarah, it happened with, you know, Yitzchak and Rivka, Isaac and Rebecca, they all were barren for long periods of time. So that was a way God was getting them to repent and to work in themselves. But when it comes, so here we have a situation where Yaakov has children and Rivka doesn't. And I think the way Yaakov is telling Rachel is, this is God speaking to you. This is God telling you that there's something here that you need to work on. And by coming to me, you're just avoiding the issue. right? You're avoiding the issue. God's this is a way God's communicating to you. And I know you don't like it, but that's what's happening here. So coming to me doesn't solve anything. So he needed to show that anger to make the point to her that you've got to look internally, not externally. Right? Stop, you know, looking or blaming anything else. This is between you and God. This is about you. And that's what ultimately happens. It's interesting is the first thing she does after this episode is she has Yaakov marry her maidservant. Right? Because it says clearly she was jealous. She was jealous of her sister. So this was about jealousy. So if it's about jealousy, so she showed that it's not about her, so she marries. So he marries the maidservant. Anyway, be that as it may. So that's just a little... So we see here that the same term is used, the same anger is there, but it's a different kind of a thing. Because with Haman, it was an anger that he didn't learn from it. Right? Haman never asked himself, why am I so angry? I've got so much to appreciate in life. You know, why am I so bothered by this? This is petty of me, right? He doesn't do that. He instead lets it completely subsume him, where there's nothing else he can see or think about. But with Rachel, the same thing is used. So anger is not inherently bad, but Jacob uses it to send a message so it would impact her emotionally. And that's what anger... The point of seeming angry is because you need someone to emotionally connect with what's happening, with the message. Right? And that's why the best speakers show emotion when they speak. Because the message is not the same if you don't have any emotion to it whatsoever. It's a different message. Once there's anger, once there's something behind it, once there's some emotion behind it, now the message is going to penetrate the heart, not just the mind. So you need that. And to be unfeeling and to never be angry, to show anger is a bad thing. There are things in this world you should be angry about. And there's things in this world we should be upset about. And there's things in this world that will only get better if people are angry about it. But
Obama.
Neil.
Obama. Are you saying Obama needs to get angry?
Obama needs to get angry, or we need to get angry at Obama instead of curiosity?
It's not worth it. It's not worth it.
It's worth it.
not with Neil.
What? We'll be getting angry soon.
Yeah, the political afterwards you can have your political conversations. Not now. All right. See, Neil's trying to get people angry. That's all he was trying to do.
That's going
to
help us figure out what these guys are talking about.
Right. His point didn't have any...
Neil and I are both angry at Obama for different reasons.
But, yeah, it's okay. Anyway.
I don't think we're going to see Obama angry in a while. He doesn't get angry.
He does get angry.
Oh, he does get angry.
He gets angry, sure.
Just because he doesn't show it, I think he's...
He doesn't get angry, he gets even.
Yeah, he's number four.
Yeah, everyone gets angry, and he's known as the most cool, calm, and collected person, but there's hints of anger, for sure, there's hints of it.
Absolutely.
For sure, you can tell.
Khrushchev, banged the shoe in the United Nations. Yeah. He showed anger.
Right.
Before your time.
There's a clip you can bring up.
Khrushchev.
Khrushchev.
We will bury him.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. All right, questions, comments?
Well, then, you know, the trick is how do you get angry about a lot of things?
There's a type of anger that I wouldn't even call anger. I would call it caring about something, right? You know, like if you're failing out of school, and you don't get angry and do something about it, then, you know, okay, whatever. Then that's not good either. But that's not, you know, I wouldn't even call that anger. I would call that drive, right? There's a...
anger of oneself is an interesting topic that we haven't... That this doesn't really address.
Right.
It seems, I mean, from what we've spoken about, that anger is necessary and anger is destructive. There's two... things going on.
It forces you to pay attention to something. I don't know. Yeah. There's a line between engagement and anger.
Right.
Which some, you know, engagement is more productive and anger you start, kind of like...
Right, but often the engagement can come from a place of anger. You see something, you read something, that makes me so angry. I'm going to do something about that. Right? And then it could potentially lead to something.
Right.
You know? But it's not the anger that keeps it going. The anger is the initial push.
There's interesting research that talks about brain and maintaining just activity in your brain. And as you get to be middle-aged, what you should do is subject yourself to situations that you don't agree with. You should sort of rock the boat a little bit and engage in ideas that you don't agree with. And that actual just sort of disjointment is supposed to be productive for your brain.
Because it gets you...
It changes your brain cells.
Yeah, I think it helps you maintain connections and grow. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
Interesting.
So I had a question, Rabbi. How is getting angry, like worshiping an idol?
Because I think the point is that when... And this is, we say the same thing by haughtiness. Because when a person's angry, it's all about them. Nothing else matters. It's a very selfish emotion. And, you know, when a person's really angry. So they'll go against the Torah. They'll go against anything. It doesn't matter. They're worshiping themselves at that point. That there's nothing more important than me. And even if God wouldn't want me to do this, it doesn't matter. This is what I want to do. So God, you know, God leaves the picture when you're angry. Now, if it's, you know, if it's from a place where you intellectually have a certain perspective, and then something goes against that, so you need to, you know, have a level of emotion behind it to get, you know, if you see injustice, right? You know, so there should be a level of anger. I mean, the civil rights movement is pushed by a certain level of anger, right? It's anger at the system. It's anger at the way people are acting. But it's not manifest with anger, right? That was, I think, the beauty of the civil rights movement is that it was from a place of anger, but not manifest through pure emotion. Like the Intifada. Oh, right, which is more, right, driven by pure emotion. Yeah, I guess we could say that. Yeah, and therefore leads to immoral consequences. Right, right. So it's, I think that's the point, is to take the emotion of anger, learn from it. Why am I angry? I have a good reason to be angry. Now let's do something about it. But then you stop being angry at that point, right? I mean, once you've decided to act on it productively. It's not really coming from a place of anger. It started from the place of anger, but then the anger is now morphed into drive. You know, the anger is the pure emotion, the unadulterated pure emotion that gets things going in a number of directions. But you never want the emotion itself to be the entirety of the push, because then it's limited to your emotions, and then you're not going to go very far with it. So the emotion has to morph into drive when it's mixed with intellect, and that's the goal. That's the goal. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. And that's if you're angry at yourself as well, and applied to yourself as well. You're angry at yourself, but if you stay angry at yourself, then it doesn't go in. It's not productive. If it acts as drive to make yourself better, then it's got a purpose. All right, we will stop.